right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very special edition of The Window. We are very excited to have a special guest with us today from none other than the Hong Kong national team, Mr. Matthew Orr. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm really good, guys. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Can't wait to get started and talk to you guys about football.
Yeah, we're really excited that we could set this up and make it work. And yeah, we're looking forward to, we got some good questions lined up for you, I think, and just kind of getting to explore the world of Hong Kong football and your background as well. And yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah, let's get stuck in.
Yeah. So for those listening who may or may not be aware, Hong Kong has just qualified for the Asian Cup for the first time since 1968. So first time in over 50 years that Hong Kong will be at the Asian Cup next summer. And Matt, wanted to hear from you. What do you think that means to you personally? And what does it mean for the country to qualify after that long of a hiatus?
From a country point of view, I think it's honestly incredible. It took a while to really sink in. Because I actually went on holiday after all of that stuff. So I always stayed away from the city for a bit, but I've actually just returned, and that's when it's really hit me how massive it really is. We've gone from, football's not the biggest sport in Hong Kong. It's been quite under the radar, especially with recent results, and there hasn't been much success. The interest has definitely declined, but we've literally gone from being just regular people in Hong Kong to pretty much on top of the world in Hong Kong, all over the media. People know who we are. We're always on TV, whatever it may be. The attention's definitely there. So it's been incredible. From a personal point of view, I couldn't be happier to represent the country that I'm born in. It's a privilege and an incredible opportunity every time I get to step on the pitch for them. And to be at my age, to really lead the team to qualifying for this, for essentially the biggest tournament in Asia. It's been amazing, and I'm really humbled and privileged to do that, and I feel a lot of pride, and I really can't wait for next summer to get stuck into the tournament.
Yeah, we've noticed, one of the things that we've noticed is that the entire team is domestic based. So between training and the squad, there's over 10 players that play for Kitchy, including yourself. Yeah. I think I said that right. So how do you think that helped in such a quick three-match round robin situation in the last window?
That's the thing. There was even less expectation for our team to go out there and perform because we didn't even have our strongest team there. We've got a few players who play in the Chinese Super League who weren't able to come over because of the return quarantine. Is up to a month for some of them, which is crazy. So mm-hmm. obviously they can't, the teams wouldn't permit that to happen.
Yeah.
So we're missing, we're essentially, our back four was essentially our second and third string back four. But you know, like we just took it what it was. We just had to play the tournament, couldn't moan about it. And we really came together, and I think it made us stronger. And obviously it really helps being all from Kitchy and qualifying for the ACL Champions League next round for the first time. That really helped us as well. So we took that experience and belief into the Hong Kong camp. We've got some really good players at Kitchy. So we gel really well together, and we took that into the Hong Kong team and performed.
Yeah. That was definitely an initial thought, you know, just looking at the squad and just seeing, you know, you basically have three matches over the course of a week to qualify for the Asian Cup. And I think, you know, looking, you know, the familiarity with a lot of your teammates, you know, might be something that, you know, others didn't have that, you know, it seems like it may have worked to your advantage.
100%.
Yeah. Great. So playing in Hong Kong, you know, you were, you know, went to college and played in the United States. Was it always your intention to return to Hong Kong and play professionally?
So obviously when I went to the US, my full focus was in the States to do as well as I could there. It was always in the back of my mind that I had the option to return to Hong Kong, but it wasn't obviously my primary thought. I really wanted to give the US football in the US everything I had and see how far it could take me. So after uni, after college, I had options to go play in the USL, but taking some time to think about it, I didn't think the USL was a good fit for me. I didn't really feel like once you're in the USL as an international player, that for me is a level and ambition. I want to be go to a higher level than the USL, and I feel like as an international player there, you're sort of stuck. And to go to the MLS as an international player is extremely difficult as well with some of the names they're bringing in now. So I decided to go back to Asia because I know football in Asia it's probably people don't know too much about it in the US or Europe, but it's huge over here. The level's actually really high. And for me, my physicality, my technical ability, I thought I could progress my game a lot more in Asia, and the ceiling was higher. So I decided to come back and start my journey with Kitchy, and I haven't looked back since, and I'm really enjoying it.
Do you think that, you know, coming back to Hong Kong to play domestically gave you a little more exposure to ultimately get selected for the national team?
Yeah, and that was another thing. When I was in the US in the college system, I wasn't getting selected for the national team because obviously they weren't watching games. And outside of the US, when you tell people, you play at a university level, people sort of just like shrug it off. Like, that doesn't mean too much about it. Yeah. They don't know about it. Like, you know, the college level is actually a good level and a great filtering system into the MLS. But outside of the US, when you tell people you play in college in the professional world, they're just like, okay, that's cool, man.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. So I guess a follow-up question to kind of your time over here in the States. I guess I'm curious to know how your college experience was and if you enjoyed that. And then the, kind of a second question is I'm involved in the youth soccer space over here for my job. And I noticed that you played at IMG Academy for a little while.
Yeah, I did.
So I wanted to kind of hear what your experience was like there, because they're one of the top academies, I guess, for youth here in the US. So just kind of curious about both those things.
Yeah, I'll start with IMG. So I went to IMG when I was 15 and spent 2 years there before getting recruited to college. I can't say enough about IMG. Their facilities, their resources are second to none. Are probably honestly better than probably like 95% of most professional facilities around the world. They're crazy. Honestly, they've got everything.
Wow.
Which is why so many professional athletes go there to do their training and recovery and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But so I was there for 2 years. It really set me up for college perfectly with the schedule. It was very similar to a student athlete schedule. I improved a lot. Was around really high level athletes and really hungry athletes. So it really changed my mentality and took me to a different level of motivation and focus and set my ambitions and goals a lot higher. So I got recruited from there to University of San Francisco. And funnily enough, when I was playing as a striker or an attacking player up until San Francisco. And it was one of my first training sessions in San Francisco. We were doing finishing drills and I was just slotting goal after goal. And the head coach comes up to me and I'm thinking he's going to say, oh, something really positive about my finishing or something. And the first thing he says, he goes, Matt, have you ever played as a center back before? And I just, that just took me off my feet. I was like, no, I actually haven't. Why? And he was like, well, we're in need of a left-footed center back who's good on the ball to help us like play out the back. Would you be interested? And I didn't really know what to say, but you know, as a freshman, you really want to play as many minutes as you can. So I was like, I'm willing, I'm open to discussing more about it and giving it a go. And our assistant coach at San Francisco was Alex Yi, who's played at a very high level, MLS, and then in Europe as well. And I had a long meeting with him and he basically said, like, I think you can be really, really successful in that position. You've got the physicality and technical ability to be like a really good ball playing center back. Now you just have to learn how to defend. So yeah, at San Francisco, I played 2 years at center back and left back. We won the conference 1 year, and I was freshman team of the year the other year. So it was good. It was a weird experience, but no, I really enjoyed my time there. And then obviously transferred to Syracuse to go play in the ACC for my last year, which was, I'm really happy I could do, you know, the highest level conference in the US. So that was a good thing to end on.
Yeah. Now you hear a lot about kind of this, I guess the modern player is, you know, kind of more well-rounded, right? So they can get forward, but they can also track back and defend, right? So I'm assuming that you're kind of that learning experience about being a defender has actually helped you in your professional career to this point as well. Am I right? Or
yeah, it definitely has. I had two options, you know, I could look at when I came back and went back to being a striker here. I could look at my time in the US and say, okay, from a playing point of view, I missed out on serious match time and games as playing as a striker, or I could just look at it in more of a positive mindset and be like, okay, well, I've played as a defender now in a different position. I know what defenders hate. I know what defenders like. And I know what their tendencies in when defending players in attacking positions are like. So I really tried to turn it on its head, take it in a positive mindset and try flip that on now. Okay, I'm a striker. What do defenders hate? What do they hate when I'm dribbling at them? If I do things quick, if I run in behind them, whatever it may be, I started to do more. So I think it actually did help me as a striker, definitely. Having that experience as a defender, you really know what defenders don't like. I think it's really helped me. But I think for college, predominantly, it was more of like a mentality thing that helped me the most. Because in college, it's ruthless. The student athlete space is ruthless. Everyone wants to be a professional. And your friends off the pitch, but when you're on the pitch, it's pretty cutthroat. You know, how they're bringing 8 to 10 players in every year that preseason. No one's mates. I can tell you that.
Right.
That first week, everyone's trying to kill each other. So I feel like they don't have that really like hungry mentality as a youth footballer in Hong Kong, because there's no one's primary thought to be a professional footballer with such a successful business city. So people are more focused on their education and all of that stuff. So I'm really happy I got to the US early and learned that mentality aspect of football that's really required.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I'm going to cut on Brandon here for just a second, because you kind of just hinted at one of the questions that I had for you is, you know, in general, what is the state of the game in Hong Kong? You kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but I guess my broader question is, you know, are there a lot of kids that play football there, and where do they play it? And then is it supported by the parents if they do play, or do kind of more traditional family values kind of take precedence, you know?
I'd say there is a huge emphasis on the value of education here. I think that ties in with China as well, and just the Asian culture, you know, education is massive.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily in Hong Kong, you can do both up until you're 18, or to the end of high school, you can do both. So there's no need to really give up school at an early age. But obviously football is not on the first thing in everyone's mind. You know, it's more, I'd say it's more like, the poorer demographic of Hong Kong play football. So, and they play on the streets and housing estates, and all of that stuff, you know, so that, people love football. And for a country of only 7 million people, there is a lot of boys and girls who play football. Especially the girls team, they're on the rise now. They just had a couple of good wins against Singapore. But yeah, the state of Hong Kong over the last 3 years, Hong Kong football over the last 3 years has been extremely difficult. COVID, you guys COVID doesn't even exist anymore in the US, but I'm sat here. I'm still sat here in hotel quarantine. I've got a week's quarantine when I return to Hong Kong. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So COVID has literally stopped, started football and had a huge impact for the last 3 years. Even before the Champions League this year, we couldn't train as a team for 2 months. All the pitches were closed and everything. So I had to find alternatives. So like, it's really impacted Hong Kong football massively. So to do what we've done as a country the last 4 months is, with everything stacked against us, has been honestly amazing.
Yeah. And so you got your international debut last year during COVID. And I have a question for you, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts. How many international goals have you scored?
For the first team?
Yeah.
3 goals and 1 assist in 7 games. Right.
So I agree. I think you also have scored 3 goals. But if you look at the match report from that first Iran game, it was a cross. You had a great header. Watch the replay. In my opinion, you clearly scored. But some of the match reports don't have you as the goal scorer. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. After the game, I went back into the sheds, and someone came up to me and said, I can't remember who, but they said, like, they haven't given you that goal. And I was like, that's my debut goal against one of the best teams in Asia. That's my goal, you know? So I went into the referee's office, and then I was like, guys, like, that was my goal. Can you have that changed? So luckily, even though it remained as someone else's goal on some websites, on the official AFC website, it was my goal. So I'm awesome about that.
You scored. You definitely deserve that goal.
Yeah.
Especially against Iran. Like, I'm claiming that. No way. I'm not having that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. And speaking of, you know, your other goals, you know, you scored 2 goals recently. They were both match winners, which is awesome. You know, one against Afghanistan, one against Cambodia. Both of them, you know, you struck the ball with, you know, real venom. Is that your approach typically, just kind of overpowering the keeper? Are you more of a finesse player? You know, is that your typical kind of approach to goal scoring and how you go about it?
I think it really depends on where, like, what position you are, where you're hitting the ball from. I think in the box, placement is key. But my goal against Afghanistan, I had a look up, and most keepers think you're whipping it to the far post. But I thought if I just smack this into towards the near post, I'll probably catch him off guard. So I think outside the box, I typically like to go for power. Because I have quite a good left foot, and I can generate quite a lot of power in my shots. And the ball tends, especially nowadays with these balls, it can move all over the place. So I'd say for me, outside the box, I like to go with power. And then inside the box, that goal against Cambodia, I did smack it really well. But yeah. I was trying to place it in the far corner of the goal. So, yeah. When I was younger, I did used to go for power all the time, but at Kitchu we have, I don't know if you guys know him, but Dejan Damjanovic, our number 9 at Kitchu. He's top scorer in the Asian Champions League ever, Korean League legend. He's a crazy man of goals anyways, but I've worked really closely with him over the past year and a half, and he's sort of developed my game to being more about placement, finding the bottom corners. What world-class strikers do all the time. So yeah, I think placement and overpower is key.
I think on both goals, the keeper did not move at all that you scored.
No, you didn't
give him any chance at all. There was no doubt about either of those goals. So
that makes him even better.
Well done. Well done. All right. So in terms of just kind of the Asian Cup and thinking through, you know, where you were at and what you needed to qualify. For those listeners that weren't really familiar with the format, there were groups of 4 teams. The top team in each group qualified. The second place team, 5 of the 6 best second place teams, also qualified for the Asian Cup. I think, you know, I'm not sure what the mindset was, but from our perspective, kind of looking at the teams, seeing India's hosting, You know, our thought initially was that they're probably favored, but you played them last. And I knew that going in that you had the host last, that probably, you know, would be the most difficult game. Did you have kind of a roadmap heading in of we want to win the group, we want to finish top two? What was kind of the mindset heading into these qualifiers?
I think we knew as a team that we had the most favorable group, definitely, without a doubt, looking at some of the other groups. The two higher ranked teams were very strong. But looking at our group, the two higher ranked teams, we felt that we could beat. And especially how our games laid out, Afghanistan, Cambodia, India last. So we hope that we could, because with 6 points, we felt that that would be enough to qualify at least as a second place team, without a doubt. Yeah. So we were lucky we went Afghanistan, Cambodia, and India last. So we put that India game way ahead of us. We weren't looking at it. Afghanistan was the final, essentially. This was winner takes all. We have to beat them because they're favorites to come second in this group. So that was the massive one. And we played an incredible first half, came out firing, scored 2-0 up after 25 minutes. We were all over them, controlling the game. And then second half, I think we went more defensive anyways because they started to come after us and we just wanted to protect our lead. So after we got that 3 points, that was huge. And I think we brushed by Cambodia quite easily. But I think that India game was a bit of a poor representation of how we did in that group and how we were playing. Because Palestine actually beat Philippines that morning before the India game.
So you already knew we were
through. We were through, right? Yeah. So people's phones were blowing up. The media was blowing up. Like, there was a lot of distractions around that game. So I don't think people's mentality and heads were completely 100% focused on that game.
Yeah.
And then India with 60,000 people in the stadium, super, super hungry to come first place. Mm-hmm. And obviously they have to beat Hong Kong, right? So, and they scored within like a minute, mate. So like everything fell apart that game. So that was a sour and bitter ending that I still can't stop thinking about, but you know, I can't slate our team too much. You know, we delivered and yeah,
absolutely. That was actually the next question I was going to ask you, which you already kind of answered, was knowing that you had qualified, because exactly, you know, the Philippines, they were on 4 points. You knew mathematically you already had 6, you were ahead. So you were in. Did you start celebrating before with it, or did you really save that till after the Indiana match? Because it did kind of, you know, losing 4-0, unfortunately, is not the best feeling, but at the same time, you qualified regardless.
Yeah,
so.
It was the 4-0 was really disappointing, to be honest. Our coach, as soon as we qualified, we were actually in the middle of a team meeting because we watched, I think, the second half of that game. Mm-hmm. And of course, there were celebrations, but our coach was trying to harp on the fact, like, look, we've got a game tonight.
Yeah.
We want to come first place. Let's end this journey with a very positive result. Because we needed a draw minimum to come first place in our group off goal difference. Unfortunately, we couldn't do that. I'm really disappointed about that because I felt India, we could have beat them. If we played our game, we definitely could have beat them in front of their home fans, which would have been nice. But
yeah,
we can't think too much about it.
Have you started thinking about the finals yet or not? Is it too soon to start thinking about what's going to happen at the actual tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I went back to Thailand on holiday after all of that stuff just to have a break. And I was trying not to think too much about it. But then the Asian Cup posted the last 24 teams of the final tournament. And I was honestly sat there for about half an hour just looking at these teams. I was just like thinking to myself, like, I'm going to be playing against some of the world's best here. Like, I could be lining up against Sun, Premier League players, like all of them. So I was just digesting it. The draw's in January, so I don't think the excitement will happen until I know who the group is.
Yeah.
But for now, I just hope, honestly, why not just get the strongest teams possible and just enjoy the experience of being there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What if you guys end up drawing China?
I'll tell you what. No, not speaking on any of like the politics, but
yeah,
that I'll tell you, that is who Hong Kong want the most, because that is a crazy game. Honestly, it's a crazy game. You guys wouldn't know, but every time a Chinese team have played in Hong Kong or we go over there, the atmosphere is something else. It's just abuse. It's just abuse for 90 minutes. Yeah. It's crazy, mate.
Yeah. Well, that's what kind of prompted the question, because I've seen some comments and you know, some stuff like that about, you know, the rivalry between the two. So
yeah. Yeah. I personally really hope that we get China.
Yeah. And regardless, originally the tournament was going to be in China and they've since withdrawn as hosts. So I think it's still kind of up in the air where it's ultimately going to be. But, you know, had that actually happened, also just an additional element of intensity for sure.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
Well, it looks like, you know, Hong Kong and China will be in different pots for the draw. So the possibility to draw them is there. So
there's a big possibility. I just have a feeling that it's going to happen as well. I don't know why. I just have a feeling.
I love it. It gets me excited.
Yeah.
Can you take us through like a typical match day with the national team? Like what, like your schedule, like what do you guys, I have this feeling and I'm sure everything is kind of planned out like hour by hour, right?
Yeah. So when we were in India, we were actually in a competition bubble, so we couldn't leave the hotel for 2 weeks. So, but yeah, on a match day, it was wake up, breakfast, and then you have a stretch, a yoga and like opening, loosening up session. And then you'd have like a 3-4 hour break where you can go about, chill, have a snooze, whatever you need. And then it'd be a meeting where you talk about the tactics and the final plans for the game, and they announce the starting lineup, and then you have lunch directly after that. And depending what time the game is, if it's late in the evening, you'll have another 4 hour break and then have your pre-match meal. Or if the game's like a late afternoon game, after lunch you have probably an hour, go get your stuff, get ready, and then head to the game. Usually get to the match like 2 hours before, so you have a bit of time to just get in your mental preparation in, whatever your body needs. Some guys like get massages, whatever it may be. Every player has their own routine, so it's good to get there early so everyone can feel comfortable and get their own routines in, and then yeah, play the game.
Can you share with us what your routine is?
I honestly know a lot of players have superstitions and all this stuff. I don't actually have any superstitions. The only thing I do is put my left boot on before my right boot always. But I feel like with superstitions, like when you forget to do one, you automatically think you're going to have a bad game. So you're just mentally defeating yourself.
Yeah.
So I just try to eliminate any of that shit, old stuff. And then, so you're just going into the game, just like nothing's in the back of your mind that you're going to have a bad performance, you know? But I usually just have a roll out, a stretch, get a massage. I like to listen to music, so I'm listening to my own music rather than what's on the speakers the whole time. And just think about the game and what I need to do and what I need to do to perform. I quite like being vocal in the dressing room, so I like getting the boys up for it. So I'm always trying to speak, like within the build up to the game, always trying to say bits and bobs here and there to try to get the boys up for it. So
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What do you think is coming next for yourself? Do you think you're planning to stay in Hong Kong? Do you have ambitions to move outside of Asia?
I mean, for me, I think Asia for me is the perfect fit. I haven't looked beyond Asia, but obviously I have big ambitions and goals as a footballer to play at as high as level as I can in Asia, whichever league that may be. China being right next door, that's probably the most realistic and biggest opportunity for me right now. But look, I'm under contract with Kitchi. I'm still happy here. I don't think too much about where I'm going to be or what's going to happen in the future. I just try to focus on what I have to do now, which is to score goals and perform and get better on a daily basis. And I think the rest will come on its own. But yeah, I mean, I have much bigger ambitions and to remain in Hong Kong football my whole life. So I'm definitely going to push for that next step. I'm not going to say if it's now or in the year's time or further on, but yeah, I'm hungry for more.
Yeah, I think it's great that you've got such a connection with the national team, you know, playing in Hong Kong, you know, returning, having been in the United States and coming back. So I think that's great that you've got such a connection to Hong Kong.
Yeah, I mean, it's home, so, and I love this place. So, yeah.
So this is kind of a silly question, but can you, so explain your accent, because obviously you speak English very well. But you are born in Hong Kong. So where's the tie in here?
My dad's from New Zealand and my mom's half Chinese, half Kiwi, New Zealand. So, and I went to international school growing up my whole life. So English has been my main language. I can speak Chinese too. And I'm always trying to improve on my Chinese, but English is definitely my main language.
Gotcha. And when you say Chinese, you mean like Mandarin? Is that accurate?
Cantonese.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. And what in the national team is it kind of a mix of languages, or are there a lot of other English speakers?
Most of the local lads can actually speak English quite well. But we have quite a few mixed guys like me on the national team, or naturalized players on the national team. And the head coach is always an international coach as well, so he has to speak English. So I'd say English is the main language in the national team, but obviously people speak Cantonese, Mandarin, Portuguese, whatever it may be. There's quite a few language going around.
So I had one more question. I'm not sure if Joe had any, but I wanted to know, you know, if people want to get into the Hong Kong national team and learn more about your league, kind of the things that you do, what's the best way for fans to get involved and learn more about the Hong Kong team? What would you want people to know?
I think, that's a tough question. I haven't thought about that one. I'd just say, like, you can follow, I'd say Kitchy is the team to follow in the Hong Kong Hong Kong League. They're like the Man City of Hong Kong. They're traditionally the best side. There's two other teams as well who are quite strong, Lee Man and Easton, who are playing currently in the AFC Cup, so the cup below the Champions League. But yeah, I'd focus on them three teams and what they do in Asia. And that will speak on what's happening with Hong Kong football, how they're performing, and also with the national team, with the recent success. I think it's exciting times for Hong Kong football, maybe the most exciting in history, with history being created on the club level and national team level.
Yeah.
So I'd say follow Kitchy. We've got a round of 16 match in August against BG, the top team in Thailand, in Japan. So that'll be exciting. And we also have East Federation games with Hong Kong team in a couple of weeks with Japan, China and Korea. So that will also be exciting. But yeah, just pay attention to the national team and Kitchy, Lee Man and Easton. And I think they'll really give you a gauge on Hong Kong football and the direction it's going.
Yeah. It's amazing how much was really at stake when you kind of just think back the, you know, a week, three matches, you know, had you not qualified versus qualifying, the different discussions that are taking place, the awareness, the exposure. I mean, just kind of thinking back, how much was at stake? Did that ever really cross your mind at all?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, my life would be completely different right now if we didn't qualify for that. But I think, I really think the belief that us Kitchy players took from the Kitchy camp qualifying to the Hong Kong camp was huge. I felt like when I got to that Hong Kong camp, there wasn't too much expectation or belief or real confidence in the group that we can make something special happen here. But luckily we had a month camp in Thailand before those games, and I think us Kitchy players were really trying to harp on the fact that, look, this is our best chance of qualifying in history. We have the players to do it. If we pull together, we can make history, guys, for your families, your friends, for Hong Kong. So yeah, my life would be completely different. And obviously that week when you come down to it, it's pretty intense, and it can really take, really have its mental impact on you. But I think it's important to take it game by game and not make the game bigger than what it is. If you break it down, it's just another game of football. And we play football every day. So just go out there, express yourself, enjoy it. And, you know, and hopefully things will go our way if everyone believes in what we're doing and we play as a team.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we're kind of grilling you with questions here, but did just want to say congratulations on qualifying. Yes. Like that.
Thank you so much. Yeah,
that is awesome. Really, it's gotta be a great feeling to know that you accomplished something really special for Hong Kong.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. Highlight of my career so far.
That's really cool. Yeah. Quick side note for anybody who's listening who does live in the US, you actually can watch the Asian Champions League on Paramount Plus. They broadcast the game, so that's kind of exciting.
Oh, really?
Yep.
They have in the US.
Yep.
That's
cool. More recently, Paramount Plus in the US has done, you know, Asian qualifiers and a lot of different matches that they've picked up. So I think they're really good proponents of getting more exposure there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Pretty glad to hear that.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And to our listeners, you know, go look Matt up, give him a follow on Instagram, all his socials. And, you know, again, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us and wish you the best of luck at the Asian Cup.
Yeah. Of course, guys. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I've enjoyed talking to you guys as well. Best of luck with your podcast moving forwards, and let me know when it comes out. I'll give you guys a share, and I hope
we will do that.
Continue to do your thing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right. Of course. No worries, guys. Have a good night. Thanks.
You too. See ya.
Cheers.